Morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy Friday, everybody. Another week has flown right by. Today's October 17th, 2025. And our top story this morning is the banks. Yikes. It was the big story yesterday all afternoon. And let me specify regional banks, the medium guys and the little guys, the big banks are doing pretty good here. And isn't that just salt in the wound? Some might even say the big banks are doing great here. Big bank earnings so far have been really good. JP Morgan's big losses tied to Tricolor was really the only dent in the or chink in the armor that was otherwise a perfect earnings season for the big banks. But as I have been saying pretty much all week as we've been reporting the big banks, it's been, don't worry about these guys, they're fine. It's the little banks, the regional banks you got to worry about, because the smaller banks are forced to take on more risk. They to be competitive with the big guys. These banks don't have the implicit guarantees that come from the federal government of being too big to fail. And so they tend to be out there taking more risk. They have to pay higher interest. And because they have to pay higher interest to keep their depositors, they have to take more risk to cover that interest. That drives them into things like auto loans, subprime auto loans, commercial real estate. And then, of course, we've had this First Brands bankruptcy and the Tricolor bankruptcy. They happened back-to-back at the end of September. My friend Lakshganapathy from Unicus Research has done a fantastic job documenting this, and she came on the channel a few weeks ago, and she told us this will not be an isolated event. There is going to be more fallout from it. And yesterday, we got some. The regional banks were hit hard yesterday. The KRE, that's the regional bank ETF that Spider puts out, that was down 6.2%. When the ETF is down 6.2%, that means the whole sector is getting clobbered. The two big losses yesterday, the two that were hurt the most, Zions Bank was down 13.1%, and Western Alliance Bank was down 10.8%. Western Alliance is interesting. That's one of those banks that was like teetering on the edge of the 2023 regional bank crisis. They managed to survive, but yesterday they were taking a hit. All right, so what happened? Zion and Western Alliance, they both had losses amounting to the tens of millions of dollars from First Brands and Tricolor. That was like the first thing that they announced that they were in trouble for. Now, tens of millions of dollars, not really a huge thing. I mean, it's a lot of money to you or me. To a regional bank, that's not a death sentence, right? It's not like the $200 million that Fifth Third took, the $200 million that JP Morgan took. I think Barclays also had a $200 million hit from those bankruptcies. But still, that's a big chunk of that bank's capital here. But it wasn't just the Tricolor and First Brands hit. Both banks also announced that they were taking tens of millions of dollars in losses tied to commercial real estate, CRE. And wow, there's one we haven't talked about in a while. You know, like every now and then, you guys may recall over the last few months, like every now and then I throw up a story about commercial real estate. And I'm like, hey, just reminding you guys, this is still out there and they're all still pretending these buildings are worth something they're not. Yesterday, it reared its ugly head. Let's see. On top of the tens of millions tied to First Brand and Tricolor, Western Alliance disclosed in an SEC filing that they were taking losses due to a suspected collateral fraud tied to commercial real estate in California. Collateral fraud. That's interesting because that is exactly what happened with First Brands and with Tricolor, the multiple pledging of collateral. It looks like a similar failure mode coming from a totally different industry. Remember how they said they were isolated incidents? It's amazing how widespread these isolated incidents are. I keep hearing how isolated these things are over and over again. Here's isolated, there's isolated, there's isolated. Man, is there a lot of isolation? And look, the Western Alliance in this SEC filing about these losses tied to commercial real estate, it was interesting that they reiterated their guidance. And they basically said, these loans that we're taking big losses on, it's okay because we have two high net worth individuals that have provided guarantee on these loans. By the way, high net worth individuals, they're like two super rich guys co-signed on these loans. And it looks like the collateral on these loans was double pledged. We don't think we're going to lose any money because we think we can get our money back from these two guys. And I did some research into these two guys, the names Andrew Stupin and Gerald Marshall. And let me just tell you, these guys appear to be career scumbags who are sued every other year. They've been involved in other fraud cases tied to other commercial real estates. So I do not share Western Alliance's confidence that they're going to easily be able to retrieve this money from these guys. These guys are slippery. They are. Let's just leave it at that. All right. So that took the whole regional banking sector down yesterday, all of these stories. Now, you know, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, he said in their earnings release that he suspected, or what did he say? When you see one cockroach, there's always more. And of course, you know, all the private credit guys, they got all upset over that. And like, oh, the banks have the problems, not us. They all have problems. Well, yesterday we saw more cockroaches. And now all the banks are out there playing defense. You have to imagine in Bankville right now, everybody is saying, all right, guys, it's time to do the due diligence that we all should have done before we issued all these freaking loans. Everybody go double check. Everybody make sure we didn't loan millions of dollars to frauds and they didn't double pledge the collateral. They're all picking up the phones and they're checking. And they're probably all saying, oh, crap. Yep, we did it too. Guys, we got problems. So will these isolated incidents that are now, I think there's four isolated incidents now, will there be a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth? I don't know. Probably. Do we really think that all of the fraud has now been exposed and now we can all just go on with our lives and be on our merry way? No, of course not. Now, there's an important thing here. The lending is probably going to start drying up. Banks are going to be on the defensive. We're going to see risk-off mentality, which means struggling firms are going to have a harder time finding loans to stay alive. So this could cascade into more failures. But the one thing I want to do, like I want to temper the doom a little bit here. There is no stories anywhere yet about deposit flight. And that's the missing ingredient. It's not 2023 all over again. Not yet. The deposit flight, the panic among people pulling their money out, that has not happened. And that's really the failure mode for banks, right? The losses is what causes it, but it's when people demand their money back and the banks don't have it. That's what causes the bank to fail. That is not happening yet. But I can tell you, Jamie Dimon is sitting there as he's talking about cockroaches. He is licking his chops, just waiting for JP Morgan to get bigger and bigger, gobbling up pieces of little banks if 2023 were to happen again. Elsewhere in the market this morning, the metals market taking a little bit of a breather here. We had margin requirements at the CME were increased last night. Shout out to my friend Bob Coleman from Idaho Armored Vaults. He tweeted about this. When they raise margin requirements, it basically creates forced selling. I always warn people about margin. They borrow money to make bullish bets on gold, and then the CME group raises the margin requirements. They get a phone call from the bank. It says, put more money in your account or we're going to force you to sell your position. They don't have the money. They sell the position. So we've got a little bit of sell-off in metals going on right now that, in my opinion, is tied to that margin increase. I don't think this is a top for metals, but let's expect some pretty violent pullbacks, guys. We have had a rip-your-face-off rally in metals. It is not reasonable to expect this to continue forever. There will be pullbacks along the way. Be careful on leverage. Meanwhile, we got some video and pictures this morning of people going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs outside retail bullion dealerships overseas in Vietnam and Australia now. Again, there's plenty of metal here in the States. It's not hard to find metal. The premiums are starting to go up, and we are starting to see retail pile in. But they're going nuts in some countries for this stuff. We've got Bitcoin is selling off this morning. Look, crypto winter is here, guys. The stocks are always right eventually. I've been warning about this one. Now we've got risk-off sentiment prevailing in the market. Bitcoin is going to be one of the first things sold in that environment. And, of course, taco is back on the menu. According to the headline, President Trump in an interview on Fox Business this morning said that the tariffs on China are not sustainable. And, well, then he went to say, right now the number is pretty high, but it's not going to stay there. Or maybe it will. I don't know. Waffling back and forth. Sending mixed signals to the market. Stocks rallied a little bit on that news. Even the regional bank stocks that were clobbered yesterday were positive this morning. A little bit of a dead cat bounce. Maybe the taco is contributing to that. Also, we've got some relief for the auto industry on tariffs coming this morning. I suspect that has a lot to do with Germany, Japan, and South Korea. We're trying to get trade deals done with them. We want all these countries to side with us against the Chinese in the trade war. And so some overtures in that direction certainly would help. We've got optimism about a deal with the South Koreans that appears to be hung up on a swap line. The South Koreans have promised to invest a whole bunch of money in the United States. The problem is they don't have the dollars. They have plenty of won. They don't have the dollars. And if they sell their won to buy their dollars to invest in the United States, they'll crash their currency. They don't want to do that. So they want a swap line with the Fed to do it. I think the Fed is going to end up doing this, or the Treasury will end up doing this. They're already doing it with Venezuela and Japan and other countries. So I think it's just a technicality before we get that announcement, probably next week. And American Express earnings came out this morning. Great news, everybody. Rich people are doing really well. So I'm sure you can take that story and just cuddle with it at night, and it'll keep, you know, make you all stay warm and as things get colder out here. Yeah, the bifurcated economy, it is showing up in those Amex earnings. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Once again, let's shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads. And of course, by tomorrow, I mean Monday. We do this every business day, not on the weekends. The S&P 500 is negative 6.2 points, down about 0.1%. It was briefly positive this morning on that taco news. You can see when Trump gave that interview earlier this morning, stocks started moving higher. Now it looks like the worries about the banks may be taken back over. The Dow is still in positive territory, 42 points higher, or 0.1% in the green. And the NASDAQ is lower, off by 84 points, or 0.34%. I think this risk-off sentiment is probably going to be driving things for most of the day today. The dollar is a little bit stronger here, up by 5 basis points at 98.42. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are higher on the long end, a little bit lower in the middle there. The 30-year Treasury is at 4.601. That's higher by almost 2 basis points. The 10-year is at 3.997. That's higher by 2 points and change. The 2-year, 3.453, up by almost 3 points. And the 1-month is up by a fraction of a point at 4.086. And looking over at the commodities board, you can see we are taking a break here in this big rip-roaring metals rally. We've got spot gold at $4,315. That is down by 12 bucks, or about a quarter of a percent. Now, that New York gold futures price, that is actually a little bit higher here this morning, up 22 bucks, 43.27, half a percent. So gold pretty much taking a break here. Now, silver is pretty deep in the red here this morning. And I use that term lightly, guys. We're still over 50 bucks, but it is selling off. Spot silver, 53.29. That's off by 84 cents, or 1.56%. The December silver futures contract, that's the New York price, 51.95. That's off by $1.34, or 2.5%. So look, we still have a big arbitrage opportunity here of $1.30. So still a big gap between the London and the New York prices. But those margin requirements at the CME group, they are forcing some selling. That is bringing some temporary relief to silver prices. I don't think it'll last. We've got copper's lower by 0.4%. Platinum and palladium are both down by 5% and change. And WTI crude oil is up about a dime here, $57.55 for November WTI futures. Now, let's take a look at some of this stuff, guys. We saw this one yesterday. I posted something similar. People lining up to buy physical gold yesterday when it's the most expensive form to sell it at an all-time high. And this person is saying we're extremely close to the macro top. I disagree. I do think we're going to see some pretty violent pullbacks, but I don't think we're close to the top. All the things propelling gold higher are still very much in place. But this is showing people at ABC Bullion, I believe in Australia, and they are lined up around the corner to buy gold at this place, guys. People are going crazy for metal. And again, we're not really seeing that in the United States. We're seeing that in some places here, but we're seeing a lot of it in Australia. And then we had somebody in the comments here posted this video that's showing people like clamoring to get into this place. This is in Vietnam. Again, this is a retail gold dealer. People are just going crazy for metals here. So the anecdotes are piling up around the world of people going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And we are seeing the CME group is doing everything they can to tamp down that enthusiasm. Shout out to Bob Coleman at Profits Plus ID on Twitter, who said gold and silver futures alert. The CME raised margin requirements on gold futures by 5.5% and silver futures by 8.5% effective Friday, 10/17/25. That means if you want to make levered bets on gold and silver futures, you better have a lot of cash to put up in your account. And if you don't, they are going to force close your position. So you've got levered longs are being sold on purpose here. They are bringing the price down. It's not unusual to see this. That is explaining the dip this morning. Meanwhile, Bitcoin is selling off again as this risk-off rally continues. $105,215 for Bitcoin, off by a couple thousand bucks here, $3,000 lower. We were $108 yesterday. Look, guys, we're not quite taking out the lows. This chart doesn't quite capture the lows that we hit last Friday. We were down around $102,000 on the last Friday sell-off. But you can see here that it's been a really rough week. And also, we've had some liquidations in ETFs here. Spot Bitcoin ETFs see the largest daily outflows since August, worth $536 million. Now, one of the reasons why people claim that this time is different and why there won't be a crypto winter is because of Bitcoin ETFs and the rising demand. And you can see here, Bitcoin ETFs doesn't mean you don't get participation during a sell-off. It actually makes the selling easier. $536 million got liquidated yesterday. That, you know, if the people are selling the ETFs, then the ETFs are selling the underlying Bitcoin to meet those redemptions. And so that is contributing to the sell-off. The market is very much risk-off. And why is the market risk-off? Probably because Bank's trio of alleged fraud sparks fear of broader issues. This was all the rage yesterday. Relative to the collapse of First Brands and Tricolor Holdings, the hits disclosed by regional lenders Zions Bancorp and Western Alliance seem small, a figure in the tens of millions, not in the billions. Still, the back-to-back reveal of loan fraud renewed the simmering debate on Wall Street about whether the era of freewheeling capital is about to cause a comeuppance for banks and non-banks alike. In the case of Zions and Western Alliance, the alleged culprits were the same. Investment funds tied to Andrew Stupin and Gerald Marcil, among other parties, borrowed the funds to finance their purchase of distressed commercial mortgage loans. A lawsuit from Zions revealed its wholly owned subsidiary, California Bank and Trust, provided $60 million to the borrowers, and that an investigation found many of the notes and underlying properties were transferred to other entities, allegations that, of course, Stupin and Marcil's attorney said they would vehemently deny, not just casually deny, mind you, vehemently deny. That's a very serious denial. The disclosures add to other recent loan blowups, including subprime lender Tricolor Holdings, which filed for bankruptcy last month and triggered a near total wipeout on some debt. That was followed by the collapse of auto parts supplier First Brands Group, which owed more than $10 billion to some of the biggest names on Wall Street. While Zions and Western Alliance reported relatively small losses from the alleged fraud, the reaction from stock investors was much more significant. 74 of the biggest U.S. banks shed more than $100 billion in market value on Thursday. So I want to send a shout out here to Special Situations Newsletter, who had some pretty good coverage of this one yesterday, and they provided this additional information here. They had exposure to First Brands, but also Small Commercial Real Estate Investors Group fraud, same as Zions. That's those guys, Stupin and Marcil. Western Alliance also lent money to the same investor group for them to originate or buy mortgage loans, according to the bank's lawsuit in August. The outstanding balance on that loan is $98.6 million. Western Alliance found that the collateral was supposed to be backed by a first priority lien, but that wasn't the case. It alleged that the borrower created fake title policies by omitting the senior liens. So omitting senior liens, you know, oh, we're supposed to have first lien. No, they have first lien. That's double pledging of collateral, just like Tricolor and First Brands. At the same time, the borrower drained funds from accounts that acted as additional collateral, according to the lawsuit. As of August 18th, the borrower held a little over $1,000 in their bank account at Western Alliance, while the required monthly average was $2 million, according to the lawsuit. Western Alliance, which also has exposure to First Brands, said it doesn't expect the issue to change its 2025 outlook. I can tell you, I do not share that optimistic appraisal of the situation. I did some background check on these guys, Stupin and Marcil. They are both involved in multiple court cases, frauds, settlements, going back years. These guys are less than forthcoming, honest individuals. Let's put it that way. I do not think Western Alliance is going to be able to get their money back from these guys. And so, you know, all the things that they said, oh, don't worry, we're going to reiterate our guidance. Very little chance of that, in my opinion. Now, we got another article about this one, and I just thought this was hilarious. Investors get Silicon Valley Bank flashbacks as regional banks retreat. Now, this article reiterates a lot of what I have already covered. But what I saw in this article that I just had to share with you guys was this quote as we scroll down a little bit. Where is it? Oh, I lost it. Hold on. Here we go. This one right here. The case of Zions and Western Alliance is an ostensibly isolated story, according to Jim Reed, global head of macro research and thematic strategy at Deutsche Bank. But the comparisons to 2023 are inevitable and raise broader questions over potential credit quality issues, he said. And every damn time, there's a failure, right? As soon as Tricolor went bankrupt, the first thing these guys did is they said, it's an isolated event. Then First Brands went bankrupt and they're saying, oh, look, there's another isolated event. Now we've got Zions and Western Alliance having fallout from this and this additional commercial real estate. And the first thing they do is we bring out this guy from Deutsche Bank and he says it is ostensibly an isolated story. All right. I'm not sure what the qualifier ostensibly means. It's like on the surface, it's an isolated event. Okay. Another isolated event. Man, there's a lot of that going around. It's almost like they are unisolated. How about that? And speaking of unisolated events, I want to send a shout out to Nightingale Associates. He does an excellent job on Twitter. He's been covering a lot of commercial real estate fallout. And this is just an example. This is not a new story here, although there's some recent developments. But this shows you how widespread the fraud is in commercial real estate. Merchants Bank of Indiana provided a $21.6 million loan on a 365-unit Midway Square townhomes in Flint, Michigan. Now they're selling the apartment complex for just $1.5 million. $21.6 million loan selling for $1.5 million. That's a big loss there. Merchants Bank of Indiana announced last quarter that some of its borrowers were under investigation for mortgage fraud, leading to $46.1 million in write-downs. Yet not just under investigation, are actually serving a sentence for fraud. Earlier this month, the fiduciary, Elizabeth LaPuma, put an additional 42 companies tied to 19 properties owned by Silber into bankruptcy. They're talking about Mosh Silber, who is a commercial real estate investor from New York, who is a serial fraudster. He is currently in jail. He's also being prosecuted for other frauds. They're not going to get their money back here. Merchants, which is the senior lender on 7 of the 19 properties, pushed back on the bankruptcy. Some residents from Midway Square townhomes in Flint are withholding rent until what they call deplorable conditions are resolved. How many of these isolated events are there out there? Don't answer that. Check out the reaction in the regional banks to this story yesterday. We have, this is the ETF down 6.2% yesterday. Now it's catching a bounce this morning. Let's refresh and get an accurate mark here. It is up 2% this morning. So recovering some of those losses on that taco enthusiasm, which we'll get to in a minute. Zions Bank was by far the biggest loser yesterday, off 13%, although it's got 5% of that back here. So again, 5% of a smaller number. So it lost $7 yesterday. It's up 2%, $2 and change today. A little bit of a dead cat bounce in these regional banks. Western Alliance Bank, same story, down 10.8% yesterday, up 1.5% this morning. So we are seeing a recovery in this name, in these names. Is it a dead cat bounce or was the sell-off overdone? I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what comes out of this. One other name I want to put on your radar, guys, is Ally Financial. They lost 3.1% yesterday. They're actually up 5.5% today. This is a big player in auto loans. Ally is the biggest lender in automotive. Keep your eye on this one. If Tricolor is really an indicator of how bad the auto market is, Ally is going to have trouble. Now, something else I want to draw your attention to is what's going on in the banking system. Now, recall yesterday we had the story about how Jerome Powell is saying we're almost done with quantitative tightening, that the Fed is nearly complete unwinding their balance sheet. Now, this is the reverse repo here. And remember, reverse repo was up in the trillions back in 2023. It's been coming down. It's been taking its sweet time getting to zero. But if you look at just a one-year chart, you can see we're pretty much at zero here. Yesterday, reverse repo was $6.9 billion. Before that, 3.5, 5.5. We're basically a rounding error. The reverse repo is all but exhausted. Now, yesterday, we got this one in Reuters. U.S. banks tap Fed repo facility as overnight rates climb, signaling funding strain. Now, we're not talking about reverse repo. We're talking about repo. This is the opposite. Reverse repo is when banks have extra money, and so they park it at the Federal Reserve in exchange for U.S. Treasuries. The repo is when the banks need money overnight, so they take their treasuries and park them at the Federal Reserve in exchange for cash. Then they repurchase them the next day. Now, the thing is, usage of the repo window indicates somebody out there, either a bank or a non-bank or a hedge fund, somebody needs liquidity. U.S. banks borrowed $6.5 billion from the Federal Reserve's standing repo facility on Wednesday. Central bank data showed as repurchase rates rose, suggesting tightness in meeting funding obligations with a large net treasury settlement due this week. We're starting to see some tightness in liquidity, guys. Now, this is the chart of the overnight repurchase agreements, the repos. Now, look at all this nonsense back here. This was repo madness in 2019. And then, of course, in COVID, everybody was struggling for funding. All right. We're nowhere near that. But you'll notice for years, there was nothing going on in the repo market. We had all that extra money in reverse repo, all that extra liquidity. Now, all of a sudden, reverse repo is down to almost nothing. And look, the bumps are starting again. Let's zoom in a little bit. All right. Not a whole lot, but we had $6.5 billion got borrowed. That's more than we've done in years. It's worth pointing out, as some of these banks are starting to have problems, as these bankruptcies are propping up, somebody out there is tapping the Fed for liquidity overnight. It's indicative of very early signs of stress in the banking system. Emphasis, very early. This isn't a crisis yet. Meanwhile, we've got Trump says he threatened high tariffs on China, but that they are not sustainable. This is the taco trade, and it looks like it's taken stocks higher this morning. President Donald Trump said high threatened tariffs with China were not viable as tensions between the world's two largest economies intensify ahead of an expected face-to-face meeting with Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping. It's not sustainable, Trump said in an interview with Fox Business, a clip from which aired Friday. When asked whether the levies he has threatened to impose on China could remain in place without significantly affecting the economy, but that's what the number is. It's probably not, you know, it could stand, but they forced me to do it. So, okay, it's probably what the number is, but probably not, but you know, it could be. Nice, consistent delivery there, Mr. President. He's just waffling back and forth. Maybe it is, maybe not. Hey, who knows? The tariff clash between Washington and Beijing saw U.S. import taxes on Chinese goods rise to as high as 145% in a tit-for-tat exchange that raised fears of a global downturn and a cutoff in trade between the two economies. Those levies were paused, however, in a series of 90-day truces, the most recent of which is set to expire on November 10th, unless it is extended again. The pause was intended to allow the U.S. and China time to resolve broader disputes over trade, but those efforts suffered a setback as Washington expanded some restrictions on technology and proposed levies on Chinese ships entering U.S. ports, and Beijing responded with similar moves and outlined tighter export controls on rare earths. Trump last week threatened an additional 100% tariff on Chinese goods by November 1st and floated the idea of canceling the planned meeting with Xi, expected to be on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in South Korea later this month. So Friday, it was 100%. Today, it's taco. What's it going to be next Friday? Place your bets, folks, and may the odds be ever in your favor. And we've also got some tacos in Autoland. U.S. nears tariff relief for auto industry after lobbying push. The White House is poised to ease tariffs on the U.S. auto industry, a move that would deliver a major win for car makers that have aggressively lobbied to stem the fallout from record-level import duties. The Commerce Department is slated to announce a five-year extension for an arrangement that allows automakers to reduce what they pay in tariffs on imported car parts. According to people familiar with the matter, previously that provision was scheduled to sunset after 2 years. Car parts, that's interesting. First brands, car parts retailer goes bankrupt. Also, there was a German layoffs in Bosch recently. There are other German car parts manufacturers that are having problems. All of a sudden, tariffs going easy on the car parts. That's interesting. The announcement could come as soon as Friday, the people said, noting that similar tariff announcements have slipped. The policy is expected to be detailed in government documents that also formally implement tariffs on imported trucks. The concession follows months of lobbying by car makers, including Ford and GM, to secure relief from President Trump's tariffs. U.S. automakers face higher costs from the levies he has imposed on imported vehicles, parts, and materials such as steel and aluminum. I honestly believe this has a lot to do with Germany, Japan, and South Korea, which are all big exporters and manufacturers of car parts, all countries that we're trying to get some sort of other arrangement with, all countries that we want to join us in these trade war salvos that are being fired at the Chinese around AI chips and rare earths. And we've also got this one this morning. Top South Korean official expresses optimism about U.S. tariff talks, fueling stock rally. This was yesterday in Reuters. South Korea's chief presidential policy advisor said on Thursday he was optimistic about talks to finalize a trade deal with the U.S., the latest remark by an official pointing to progress in negotiations that helped fuel an auto-led stock market rally. Kim Jong-beom and industry minister Kim Jong-kwon spoke to reporters before departing for the United States. They will be joining finance minister Koo Yoon-chul and minister for trade Yo-han Koo for follow-up negotiations in Washington. How's my non-regional pronunciation this morning? Kim's comments echo Minister Koo's remarks earlier this week that there was huge progress, and Foreign Minister Cho Hyun saying there were positive signals in reaching a deal. On the U.S. side, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said on Wednesday the countries were close to finalizing a trade deal, and he expected an announcement in the next 10 days. We have heard that before. Seoul has been seeking to reach a deal by late October when U.S. President Trump is due to visit the country for an Asia-Pacific summit. There is a lot riding on this Asia-Pac summit at the end of this month. Pay attention for that one. Seoul has been concerned over the foreign exchange implications and the structure of a $350 billion investment package included in a preliminary deal reached in late July. It has asked Washington for a safeguard, such as a currency swap line, to prevent any currency market impact, along with other measures to guarantee commercial feasibility. And it looks like that swap line, that currency swap, that is the single biggest issue that is holding up this deal with the South Koreans. They said we're going to invest $350 billion in the U.S., about half of which is supposed to go into U.S. shipbuilders, by the way, something you might need in, a hypothetical naval conflict with the Chinese, who have a 300-to-1 shipbuilding advantage over the United States, but I digress. We need this currency swap because this is basically all the dollars that the South Koreans have. If they sell all their dollars, or if they use all their dollars to invest in U.S. shipbuilding, they'll have no forex reserves to buy oil, to buy food that they need. And it basically, it would mean they'd have to debase their own currency to maintain their own imports. And so the only way the South Koreans are going to make this investment is if they get a swap line with the Treasury or with the Fed, where they basically say, look, we'll give you won, you give us the dollars, and then we'll spend those dollars on your shipbuilders. It's a budget neutral thing, and it happens outside the forex market. And so it doesn't affect the exchange rate. That's the big thing. The South Koreans don't want to blow up their exchange rate by making this big investment. I think the U.S. is probably going to end up doing this. We just did something similar to bail out Argentina this week. So I think it's probably just a matter of time, although $350 billion is much bigger than the $20 billion swap line we offered the Argentinians. And last one of the day, we got American Express beats earnings estimates as affluent customers keep spending. Good news, everybody. Our rich neighbors are doing just fine. American Express reported earnings per share of $4.14 on record revenue of $18.4 billion, beating Wall Street estimates for earnings of $4 on revenue of $18 billion. For the same period a year ago, the company reported earnings of $3.49. Really good quarter for Amex. American Express benefited from higher spending among its affluent customers during the third quarter, with credit card member spending growth accelerating to 9%, according to the company. In September, it introduced new perks and increased the annual fee for its popular U.S. consumer and business platinum cards. The initial customer demand and engagement exceeded our expectations, with new U.S. platinum account acquisitions doubling compared to pre-refresh levels, said CEO Stephen Squeri in a statement. The company said it was revising its full-year guidance for revenue growth to 9 to 10% and earnings of $15.20 to $15.50 a share. They had previously provided guidance of 8 to 10% for revenue of $15 to $15.50 a share. So they're raising the lower end of their guidance, leaving the higher end in place. But it is a beat and raise for American Express. The stock is, it's doing pretty well. Let's get a refresh here. AccuraMark 3.8% higher, $334.71 for American Express. As the bifurcated economy continues, most people are hurting here, but the wealthy are doing very well. So we got that going for us, which is nice. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. W. Willie. Welcome, Willie, to the Melonhead, sir. He's a new YouTube member. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. And just a reminder, guys, feel free to use that free super chat that you get every month, and I will read and respond to your questions on the air. Thank you so much, Willie. Appreciate the support of the channel. And there's Nashville Pasta Man, been a member for 20 months, who says, gonna sell all my metals for paper. JK, just kidding. Somehow I knew you were kidding, Pasta Man. It didn't quite jive with what I've been hearing from you. Yeah, guys, the metals thing, look, I just want to reiterate, nothing goes up in a straight line forever. You can expect some violent corrections along the way. I don't think gold and silver are done running here. I do think there is still more runway. That being said, be careful on leverage, guys. You can be wiped out. We saw they raised the margin requirements at the CME. Now silver sells off a dollar. In my opinion, though, these dips are buying opportunities. So I think I'm going to be going shopping as soon as we wrap this one up. Thank you very much, Pasta Man. Hey, there's Pasta Man again. Thank you for supporting the channel. He says, let's all ask together, how can the bond value not be affected by the loss of value of the things inside the bond? Your bonds are strong and resilient. Well, let's see. Let's do the, what was the bank lady, the lady at Deutsche Bank from The Big Short? Oh, these are very complex instruments, and these markets aren't always correlated. Oh, we're really sorry. Yeah. How can a bond's value not be affected by the decline in value of the underlying asset inside the bond? The answer is lying, theft. That's how. By the way, see also private credit and private equity. Companies that are lying about the valuations of their assets and their funds while reporting ridiculous gains that are non-existent. Non-existent. Guys, there is so much freaking fraud. We are just scratching the surface. And look, these regional banks are flipping out. Or at least yesterday they were flipping out. They're recovering this morning over this. Do we really think we're done? Have we found all the fraud? Can we all shut the lights off and go home and have a good weekend? Of course not. There's mountains of the stuff out there. And we haven't even started on the AI bubble. Oh, it's going to be great. Can you imagine when all of the BS financing, when all of the double reporting or double pledge collateral in data center construction gets exposed? Can you imagine if we're seeing tens, 20s of millions of dollars and fallout from First Brands is causing these bank stocks to sell off? What the hell is the hundreds of billions being blown on data centers going to do? Oh, it's going to be great. You're going to love it. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, happy Friday, Jack. Same to you, brother. Do you think a liquidity event with the banks like 08, could we see the metal slammy destroy metals momentum or increase it? All right, that could go either way, T.A. Chapman. In 08, during the initial liquidity event, during the panic sell-off, we saw metals sell off along with everything else. All right. So during a liquidity event, people sell everything, not because they want to, but because they have to. They're forced to sell. All right. So in the initial wave of a liquidity event like 2008, which I don't think we're there yet. All right. I don't think it's 2008 here. Could be 2007 or 2006, but it ain't 08. Metals will sell off with everything else. Now, once that initial panic happens, people tend to run for safety in the bond market and in gold. And right now, I think bonds are not such a good place to run for safety because negative real yields are a thing. Bonds, you know, the only way the government can finance itself is by paying less in interest than they debase the currency and inflation. So I think during the next big flight to safety, I think gold will outperform versus its rival U.S. Treasuries. That being said, that didn't happen on Friday. During that panic sell-off last Friday, we did see metals underperform a little bit. Treasuries did well. We saw yields fall last Friday. That meant people were buying bonds. So, you know, my theory that gold will outperform treasuries in a panic, it didn't hold true on Friday. So it's worth pointing that out. Now, eventually, the response to that liquidity event will be the same response we've gotten to all other liquidity events. Lower rates to nothing, probably negative, spin up the money printers. When that happens, gold is going to resume higher. So, you know, there's going to be periods in there where you're going to want to have a little bit of cash on the sideline, maybe take advantage of that dip. As always, with volatility and violent price swings, watch that leverage. That's how you get wiped out. You can be right and still lose money if you're not careful with your leverage. Thank you, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel. PP Poo Poo, what's going on, sir? He says, Jack Top is in for gold. That's a bold call. That's a bold call, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off for him. I know because I bought. Oh, the old hex. Yep, Jack said a thing about gold. There it goes in the red. Also, due to work, I'm unable to make Friday's Zoom call, thinking about quitting to be a full-time groupie. All right, I've got groupies now, or I think we call them Band-Aids, right? Isn't that what they said in Almost Famous? Either way, 4P, thank you so much for supporting the channel. I'm hesitant to call a top in gold, guys. And, you know, all joking aside, I can tell the sarcasm there. I know you're not calling a top. When you look at what's happened with AI, when you look at what's happened with shitcoin treasury companies, with quantum computing companies, with what's the other one? Private equity valuations, continuation vehicles. Who's going to look at a market that is based entirely on unreasonable behavior and try to say how high gold can or can't go? Who wants to? That is a fool's errand. There is no guessing how high gold can or can't go here. So just get some popcorn and watch. Have fun out there. Thank you. Thanks again, PP. Mr. Uncle Fedster, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. He says, Happy Friday, Jack. Given the prices, I'm afraid to stack any more PMs. Do you think today's dip is an opportunity or part of a downtrend? Well, I could tell you I bought a little bit of physical metal this week as well. I'm not going to buy any physical metal today, but I took some profits in some of my levered trades that I have on metals yesterday, and I'm looking to put some of those levered bets back on today if this dip goes much further than it already is. So I do think we are going to see these pullbacks on our way higher. I don't think this is the end. Again, I think trying to call a top in this environment is a fool's errand. I'm not saying it's definitely not a top. It could be. I just don't think it is. I think this move in metals is long overdue. All the underlying reasons pushing metals higher, they're still there, if not worse than they were before. So as far as stacking precious metals, I'll say the same thing I said yesterday. The reason to stack precious metals is to save. Precious metals is, you know, physical metals, right? Like your silver bar here. This is not a trade. This is not an investment. This is a savings vehicle where you don't have to worry about the interest rate the bank is paying you, not keeping up with inflation and inflation eating away your savings while it's sitting there. That's why you buy this, to save, not to trade or to invest. So I would just add that one there. Thank you, Uncle Fester, for supporting the channel. Ms. Val, forgive me, Val Mac, thank you so much for supporting the channel. It says, I don't know, 90% of my boss's Amex is actually Google ads for a downturn in our residential HVAC customers. So let's see, the boss is using his credit card to pay for promotions to try to keep the business alive because residential HVAC customers are not spending. Sounds like, residential HVAC, is that new construction or maintenance? I guess it doesn't really matter, right? Because commercial real estate is hurting. And so the big residential HVAC guys, they're probably deferring maintenance, if just like outright letting it decay entirely. And there's certainly not that much building going on in residential here. So yeah, maybe that's why Amex is doing so good. Now I would add, Val, that the provisions for credit losses and things like that in the Amex reports were pretty good. They weren't that bad. So right now, according to American Express, you know, anecdotally, hypothetically speaking, your boss is still paying his bill. So it's not a problem for them yet, but we could get there. Thank you very much, Val, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much. Mr. JJ Watt says, it's Friday, so let's see which banks go into receivership when the market closes. Oh, is it a bank failure Friday? Could it be? I don't know. Maybe. By the way, I got a thing going on with the family tonight. So if we get a bank failure, probably won't hear about it from me until Saturday if it happens, because it'll be kind of busy after the Zoom this afternoon. By the way, this a reminder that my Patreon Zoom is at 2 p.m. Eastern time today. We do that every week for all my magnanimous melon heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee members. Thank you very much, JJ, for supporting the channel. That is a definitely maybe answer to that one. How do we say this one? Obertoni Shell, Gesundheit. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. We enjoy watching you every day. We appreciate your hard work and value that you are one of the few YouTubers who isn't corrupted by advertising. Thanks for having integrity. Few do. You are most welcome. Thank you so much for the kind words. Look, I'm not allergic to advertising revenue. I will If a product that I stand behind comes along and offers me money to pump it, I will pump it. All right. Whoever says they have no price just hasn't heard the right number yet. That being said, there is no price that I will take for people to pump crypto scams, AI investing bot membership scams. I get offers from these dirtbags every freaking day. And, you know, I want to answer these emails I get from these people. Like, have you freaking seen my channel? Do you really think I'm going to pump your AI trading bot? Really? Oh, that'll fit nicely into my CoreWeave circular accounting video storyline. Good God, these people, you know. I turn away more advertising revenue than I take in. I can tell you that because, well, most of the reason, if people are spending a lot of money to advertise financial products, where is that money coming from? Ultimately, it's coming from the clients who invest with them. So therefore, can it really be that good of an investment? And that's my whole issue with the financial services industry to begin with. Thank you very much for the very kind words, Obertoni Shell. I hope I got that name right. Thank you for supporting the channel. And thank you to all of you wonderful Melonheads for having your coffee with us this morning. Appreciate that very much. Thank you guys so much for the generous super chats this morning. I appreciate that very much. As well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys. Looking forward to talking to you at 2 p.m. Eastern Time today for our weekly get together on Zoom. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Armando sneaking it in at the end. Are we seeing dollars coming back to the States yet? No, not yet. Wouldn't rule it out. That's the dollar milkshake theory there, but it's not happening yet. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. Everybody else, until next time, live small and dream big.